old scream, he fell to the floor. At first I kicked and beat him out of sheer terror so as to prevent myself from being hit. Once he fell on the floor, though, I found my terror turning to unmistakable anger. The anger was still there, the quiet anger that had welled up in my body earlier while I was walking along and thinking about Kumiko. Released now, it flared up uncontrollably into something close to intense hatred. I smashed the man's thigh again with the bat. He was drooling from the corner of his mouth. My shoulder and left arm were beginning to throb where he had hit me. The pain aroused my anger all the more. The man's face was distorted with pain, but he struggled to raise himself from the floor. I couldn't make my left arm work, so I threw the bat down and stood over him, smashing his face with my right hand. I punched him again and again. I punched him until the fingers of my right hand grew numb and then started to hurt. I was going to beat him until he was unconscious. I grabbed his neck and smashed his head against the wooden floor. Never in my life had I been involved in a fistfight. I'd never hit another person with all my strength, but now hitting was all I could do, and I couldn't seem to stop. My mind was telling me to stop. This was enough. Any more would be too much. The man could no longer get to his feet, but I couldn't stop. There were two of me now, I realized. I had split in two, but this me had lost the power to stop the other me. An intense chill ran through my body. Then I realized the man was smiling. Even as I went on hitting him, the man kept smiling at me. The more I hit him, the bigger the smile, until finally, with blood streaming from his nose and lips and choking on his own spit, the man gave out a high, thin laugh. He must be crazy, I thought, and I stopped punching him and stood up straight. I looked around and saw the black guitar case propped against the side of the shoe cabinet. I left the man where he lay, still laughing, and approached the guitar case. Lowering it to the floor, I opened the clasps and lifted the cover. There was nothing inside. No guitar, no candles. The man looked at me, laughing and coughing. I could hardly breathe. All of a sudden, the hot, steamy air inside this building became unbearable. The smell of mold, the feel of my own sweat, the smell of blood and saliva, my own sense of anger and hatred all became more than I could bear. I pushed the door open and went outside, closing the door behind me. As before, there was no sign of anyone in the area. All that moved was a large brown cat, slowly making its way across the vacant lot, oblivious of me. I wanted to get out of there before anyone spotted me. I wasn't sure which way I should go, but I started walking, and before long managed to find a bus stop with a sign reading to Shinjuku Station. I hoped to calm my breathing and straighten my head up before the next bus came, but failed to do either. Over and over, I told myself all I was trying to do was look at people's faces. I was just looking at the faces of people passing by on the street the way my uncle had said. I was just trying to untangle the simplest complications in my life, that's all. When I got on the bus, the passengers turned towards me. Each of them gave me the same shocked look, and then averted his eyes. I assumed it was because of the mark on my face. Some time passed before I realized it was because of the splatters on my white shirt of the man's blood, mostly blood from his nose, and the baseball bat I was still clutching in my hands. I ended up taking the bat all the way home with me and throwing it in a cupboard. That night, I stayed awake until the sun came up. The places on my shoulder and left arm where the man had hit me with the bat began to swell and to throb with pain, and my right fist retained the sensation of punching the man over and over and over again. The hand was still a fist, I realized, still clutched into a ball and ready to fight. I tried to relax it, but the hand would not cooperate. And where sleeping was concerned, it was less a matter of being unable to sleep than of not wanting to sleep. If I went to sleep in my present state, there was no way I could avoid having terrible dreams. Trying to calm myself, I sat at the kitchen table, taking sips of the whiskey my uncle had left with me, and listening to quiet music on the cassette player. I wanted to talk to someone. I wanted someone to talk to me. I put the telephone on the table and stared at it for hours. Call me, somebody, please, anybody, even the mysterious phone woman, I didn't care. It could be the most filthy and meaningless talk, the most disgusting and sinister conversation. It didn't matter. I just wanted someone to talk to me.